Thank you for being here this morning. I'm thrilled to be part of your conference. The reason I was really keen to be here and to share time with you is because I see the roles that you play with children is a really critical role. The community of schools, where teachers, principals, and the school community is an integral part of a young person's life and their families. And where we come into contact with social workers and school counsellors, nurses, you know, what an amazing job that you do. And what an amazing opportunity you have to make a difference in a young person's life. Sometimes we don't actually even know that a moment in time or a snatched conversation can really change the way a little person thinks and have a profound impact. Sometimes we don't realize that as they turn into adulthood, you did make a difference and they remembered you because you believed in them and you cared. When I was waiting here this morning, my son Luke, his first prep teacher, came and said hello. Hi, Mandy. I remember Luke going to school with a bag almost as big as him. And I said, this is ridiculous. If he falls over on his back, he'll be like a beetle and not be able to get up. They're so tiny, they're so precious. And when they start prep, they're going into the big world and they're so proud of their new adventure. And those primary school years are so important because that's their journey into slowly being separate from their mum, from their dad, and forming new friendships, learning how to become little adults, and testing in the schoolyard and with their peers. One day you're best friends and the next day you're out in the cold and no one wants to talk to you. It's their training ground of life, and we take them and we drop them off at school, and we trust your roles, and we trust our children will be safe, supported in a nurturing way. And that journey to start you off at the very point of life when you're a little guy or a little girl sets you up. It can set you up or it can set you back. So I'm thrilled that my little boy Luke loved school. We lived in Tyab, which is a lovely semi-rural community with a great school on our doorstep. He couldn't wait to start school. He wasn't nervous or afraid, he was ready. And he loved it every day. As Mandy would tell you, there were challenges. Luke came from a single parent household. He was the center of my universe. He had to learn in the school classroom that he wasn't the center of the school's universe. He had to wait his turn to ask questions or give answers. So it was a learning curve for Luke, and sometimes he struggled. But he was lucky because he had great teachers, knowing when to enforce boundaries, knowing when to enforce discipline, knowing when to nurture, knowing when to identify with a child who's got lots of tears and is very sensitive. You see, Luke was quite well known in his class for being a bit of a crybaby. And a lot of those little preschool, the prep kids, they grow up together and they kind of understand that this one cries a bit and this one's this, but it's all kind of accepted. But as Luke grew up a bit older, he said, why do I cry so much? And I said, mate, it's fine. You're a sensitive little boy. It's okay to cry. But when you're brave, When you need to be brave, you are very brave. And I used to give him examples of being at the dentist and having his, you know, he had a lot of dental work and he was very brave. When he had to go into hospital and have grommets put in his ears, or when he had an accident and broke his wrist, he was very brave. So just because you cry as a little boy doesn't mean that you're weak or silly or anything less. You're a little boy that's a little child. And the reason I make that point is, do we treat our little boys and girls differently? Is there something, either as a mother or dad or a school teacher, or that we kind of expect the children to behave differently? We treat them a little bit differently. We expect boys to be tougher, not be crybabies. But it's okay for little girls to be vulnerable and cry. So we set the parameters of how little boys have to learn how to contain their emotions, be strong, and not give anything away. And as they progress through life, what kind of a man does that make them? Someone that's emotionally unavailable, frightened to show their emotions and as they see them as weakness. That's really important. You know, when I was six, my mother died. And I was six, my younger brother was four, and my little brother was 1 year old. I never saw my dad cry. In fact, he actually never spoke to us about my mother's death, ever. We didn't even know that she died or that the funeral had happened. He told us at a later point. To be subjected to a trauma of that type as a child, with no one able to support your feelings, to have a voice, to be able to express yourself, that trauma remains with you forever. The only time I saw my father cry, and even indeed share the story of my mother's death and some of the complications, was when he came here for Luke's funeral. And indeed, one of Luke's little friends was struggling to express his emotion, and his parents were quite worried about him. He started crying when he saw his dad cry. As traumatic as Luke's death has been for all of us as a community, all his friends, the schools, everyone that lives and around, and in fact, obviously, Luke's death affected many people far and wide. One thing I kept saying to my friends, talk to the kids, and if they ever want to come and see me, if they need to speak to me, if they need to tell me something, please know my door is open. And they do. Because it's so important with trauma to be able to feel safe, that you can actually, and it's okay. And you are looking at those adults for cues of how do you grieve? So, you know, the school communities now, the support that they gave Luke's friends and the teachers, you know, that's so important, because as a community, it's about being totally honest with your raw grief, the anger that you feel, the frustration or confusion. Because if we're not unpacking that for little kids at the time, instead of it being character forming, it will most definitely impact in a negative way further on down the track. So the reason I was propelled, as you can see by my video, to speak to the media was because I realized there were so many things I needed to say to get so that Luke's death wasn't in vain. I had no idea I would end up being Australian of the Year and being given a platform which is very, very powerful to be able to continue my work so that Luke's name will never be forgotten. And what we're standing for is helping all women and children who are living in fear and are not safe. Because you see, what I didn't realize is we really didn't talk about family violence. It was a subject that we really didn't feel was our business. So by not talking about it, by not being open with this huge social issue, it goes on. It goes on in a very underhanded way. One in three women is affected by family violence. It doesn't matter where you are or what profession. That means one in three female teachers. That means one in three female nurses. That means one in three social workers or people that work, women that work in Safeways, lawyers, you name it. It's across all professions and it's across every suburb, including your own. That also means there are one in four children in your communities, your school community, the hospital where you work, the sporting club you might be belong to, whatever. One in four of those children in every pocket of every suburb has been affected or will be affected by family violence. So we have a huge responsibility for those children, because you could make a difference in some small way that could end up being a life-saving big way further down the track. Right now, we have two women a week being murdered. Last year, when I first started to speak, it was one woman a week. It is now two women a week being murdered. That is because they choose to leave, or they have already left their current partner. So make no mistake, and it is very confronting, this is a gender issue. This is violence against women by men as acts of power and control, because through their eyes of privilege and entitlement, they see women and their children as possessions. Now, Greg was not evil. He wasn't a bad person. He loved his son, and he would do anything for his son. But he was violent. And even though he did have a mental illness, and even though he smoked too much marijuana, which created enormous paranoia, and even though he lived in poverty, in his car, and couldn't hold down a job, even though he had everything in his life that seemed to be failing, the one bright light in his life was his son. He enjoyed every moment with him. But his desire for power and control over me was stronger than his love for his child. He needed to win and have total power and control. And in order to do that, he took away the thing that I loved the most. Left me in this life, in this world, alone. Now, that's a really tough thing for me to have to bear. It's a really tough thing for me to cope with. But this opportunity to make a difference and to feel that we are starting to sense a change around family violence gives me purpose and meaning, and I'm thankful every day for the opportunities that are coming along to me. It will never bring Luke back, but it helps me very, very much on my daily journey. So what I always want to really make sure is everyone is really clear about family violence being in every suburb, in every school community, every pocket of our country, that there are, that the statistics do not pick just the rough, violent suburbs, the people with tattoos or the people who have no teeth or drug addicts, living in poverty. We kind of want to place it that it happens elsewhere, but it doesn't. There are forms of abuse, different forms of abuse. And sometimes we only really take it, consider violence to mean that it's a physical act, where someone comes away with a black eye, broken rib, fat lip. But no, family violence also includes psychological abuse, financial abuse, sexual abuse, spiritual abuse, each of which demeans, debilitates, and brings you to the point where you have lost yourself. So psychological violence was the main form of abuse that I was subjected to. But violence typically continues without serious intervention. Right now, our systems and processes do not deal efficiently enough to help victims find safety. So what typically happens with an incident where we're forced to involve the police, we can take out intervention orders and go along to our courts. We can force and we can flee to refuges, crisis centres, but there's not enough of them. And we can't guarantee safety. And what that means is we pull women and children out of their communities, we pull them out of their friendship groups, we pull them out of their schools. And we expect them to give all of this up. The effect it has on children is enormous, absolutely enormous, as you well know, and you can imagine. What are we doing? We're setting up the children to know they're different. It's isolating them. I'll share with you a friend of mine who I've known since Luke's birth. She's been a very good friend. Luke loved her. But I never saw her much two or three years before Luke died. I was really saddened because they had been a really close friends, and I felt it was really important for Luke to have their family as my friends. But we didn't see them. Some months ago, she came to see me and she said, "I have to admit, Rosie, I didn't ring you, I didn't see you. It wasn't about you and Luke, it was because of Greg." And I said, "So you distanced yourself from Luke and I because of his dad?" She said, "Yes, I didn't want my children being exposed to Greg." So how sad that you're one of your best friends can remove themselves out of your life because they don't like what's happening in your life. And for that, Luke, as a little boy, suffered too. So as he grew up from adoring his dad to being embarrassed about his dad, to actually fear that some of his school colleagues would find out his dad lived in a car and didn't hold down a job. He was terrified. He didn't understand why friends at school didn't like him, and he started to really doubt himself. It was really troubling for me to see him the last year of his life, really for the first time ever, doubting himself, thinking he was ugly, thinking he was different. He was convinced he had a disability. And I would say, "For goodness sake, Luke, you're smart. And I thought, how can this have happened to my child who was so confident, so loved? You know, I gave him so much love. How can he be in this place? But you know, a few months before he did die, he had found himself. He was much more self-assured. He was much more comfortable. He was much happier. The school principal, the school culture took a real interest in Luke because they started to understand some of the difficulties we were having with his father. They took a real interest. But Luke didn't want to be identified as one of those kids with something different about him. He didn't want to stand out in the class. But he did need to feel that they cared. They looked out for him and they encouraged him. And it really supported me as a mum that I felt, I want to give my little boy everything and I want to have a normal family for him, but I can't. So the school community I see is really essential in what we are going to do with our young children. It is my expectation that at some point we will have in every school a respectful relationships program. Because you see, from kinder through the whole spectrum of school, we need to start to understand how we show kids what respectful relationships look like. We can't guarantee that their parents are modeling that. We can't guarantee that the cycle of violence or the cycle of abuse or the confusion that reigns can be broken. But we have to give it a good try. And by looking at respectful relationships and stereotypical sexist attitudes and gender modeling, we need to unpack all of that. How is a school culture, or the culture of a hospital, or the culture, how is that culture reflecting gender equality? Because you see, the countries have the best gender equality, have the least violence. So it is really important that a little girl grows up knowing she can be anything without limitations, total access to the same opportunities as her brother. Because you see, when I grew up on a farm, as much as I had a great upbringing in many, many ways. I lived on a farm. I had a really good time growing up, building dens, having a lot of freedom. When I say a good time, it was an isolating journey in many regards because I didn't have the security of my mother and the family unit to take care of me. But I had a lot of extended family and community in the village that I look back at very fondly and know it helped shape me. But when I was born, it was very clear that as a woman, even though I was the oldest child, I wasn't entitled to inherit the farm. My brothers were. I wasn't entitled to be given a job on the farm and a career and go to college, but my brothers were. I was expected to go out and get a husband. That didn't actually ever happen. I'm still stuck with my surname, Batty. So what I'm saying is we are born into this world with our lens, as a man, as a woman. We need to look at those lenses and we need to clean them. And we have to start to show our young people what gender equality truly is. And we need to model it within our framework of where we work. It starts from there. Now, what I really ask of people is, what do you know about family violence? Do you have those questions where you think, why doesn't she leave? Really? She should just get out of there and pack up, you know. Because what we really do a lot of the time is we victim blame. We place the responsibility on the mother to look after the children, to keep her and herself safe. And we kind of blame them without knowing what we're doing. Now, there are many reasons why a woman finds it extremely difficult to leave. Not least of which is going into abject poverty. Because you see, financial abuse can be very strong. Refusal to help with school fees, refusal to help with medical costs. So when we say, why doesn't she leave? Bear in mind that the greatest risk to a woman or her children is at that point of leaving. Greg killed Luke at the point when I was at my very strongest, the point where he had lost control. So you see, he didn't kill me, but he killed Luke. So when we consider what we're expecting from families involved in violence, we judge them, but we don't truly know that we're not experts with family violence, and we don't understand their safety risks. So what we really need to do as a school, or as counselors, or as social workers, is what is our understanding of family violence? How much do we truly know about this? Because it's your responsibilities in those roles to know, so that you are not judgmental and not critical, that you actually also, in some of the roles that you're in, and I would suggest this would be the school counselors and welfare people, working within schools, what is your risk assessment? What training have you had in the safety of children? Because you're not expected to be experts. But what I do believe you need to be experts with is linking in to the expertise. That is linking into a family violence organization in your local area, so that you can start to understand the best way of supporting a woman, a mother, that may actually be very overwhelmed at the place that she's found herself in. You being compassionate and supportive, and understanding how, through the expertise that's actually out there, you can play a big part in that journey. And when people say to me, what do I do if I know someone's being, violent or something? Well, one of the things I always suggest is to encourage people to ring the 1-800 respect line. Because from that point, they are linked into the correct crisis service or the correct counseling service. Because women don't necessarily want to leave. They actually want the violence to stop. But as I've learned, sometimes you don't always understand the level of risk that you may be in. And that's why what we need to do is respect those frontline services that have constant government cuts, that do not get the investment they deserve, and cannot do the work that they want to do because of all of these obstacles. So we need to respect our frontline services. We need to look at how can we fundraise or support them? How can we work with them? How can we lobby and advocate government so that our young people and the victims of violence have a journey that isn't going to be so terrifying? What I also suggest is there's an organization that I'm an ambassador for, and it's called Our Watch. Now, we didn't get the handouts in time for you, but I understand that they will be emailed out. And it's called Working with Children and Young People. And it's from Our Watch. I suggest you download it or go and source it or look at it. It'll give you some strategic, detailed ideas about what you can do in your school community or your working environment. Because we all need to do things and take responsibility within our own circle of influence. And what I really want to make sure that I feel that it's really easy for a child to be ostracized at school when they come from an unfunctioning family because of their behaviors. Children rarely, I think, would tell you what's wrong at home. Maybe they would, but they'd be very frightened. So behavior that's abnormal or unusual or not characteristic with a child in your care that you know, we need to go behind what the behaviors are. We need to try to understand what's going on without punitive punishment. We need to understand how to engage with that child so they feel safe. They feel safe enough to tell you what's going on. And then we need to understand, what do we do with that information and how do we support the child? You are not the experts, but the trust and confidence that a child will place in with you can make a huge difference. So we do need to address behavior, but we need to look at what is going on. Because if that child gets suspensions and then ultimately has to leave the school, what does that say to the child? What behavior are we addressing and supporting and changing? That's the responsibility I feel that we have, to really try to work with young children who are struggling. And those, they can be depressed, they can be anxious, they could be soiling themselves. Luke tried too hard to be liked. He wanted to be liked. He wanted to be the funny guy so that people would like him. Kids try too hard sometimes, you know, because they want to be liked so much. And their biggest fear is, of course, they're not going to fit in. So they can overcompensate and their peers get irritated by them and alienate them. So when we look at mental health issues as they progress through a person's life, you know, where can we help right at the very start? It's a difficult one, but there are solutions. And what I want to leave you with is today, that realization, 1 in 3 women who come to your school is affected by family violence. 1 in 3 women in your teaching community is affected by family violence. 1 in 3 women who are social workers or school counselors or come into contact with children at any point are affected by family violence. This is a huge issue. By talking about it with your colleagues, by talking about to management, it starts to have the conversation. What are we doing about this? We need to do something. How can, as a school community, we change and look at ways to improve supporting the families that we kind of know has violence at home, but we're not the experts. But what we want to be able to do is work out better strategies. So I suggest you go to Our Watch, have a look at this document, or check it out when you get it sent to you, and get to know who are the local family violence specialised services in your area. What programs do they offer or can they offer, and what support may they need from you to work more closely together? Because it is working together where we can find a solution. So I want to say thank you to Mandy. She was the best prep school teacher ever. Luke adored her. And the support I continue to have from Tyre Primary School has been great. So thank you.